I am Plant on the Line in Vancouver at thecommentary.ca. Joining me here at my office and studio, as it were, is Michael Claussen. The corporate communications professional, is a recent addition to the Huffington Post BC edition. He co-founded with Daniel Fontaine the widely read political and urban affairs blog City Caucus. I'll ask him about that website's winding down. In its time, it was a must-read for a lot of people. He was also a candidate in last year's municipal election, running for a seat on Vancouver City Council for the NPA and losing. There's been some talk this past summer of him running again. He lives in the neighborhood and is very gracious in dropping by. His website is at michaelclaussen.net. Please welcome back to the Plant Online program, Mike Claussen. Mr. Claussen, good morning.
Hello, Joe.
Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, well, pleased to be here in the studio.
It's really great. This week we're trying this out, so you're good to help me out
and try. It's great.
The talk in the city is that one or more of the people elected last November. I guess the one woman on Parks Board, she's running for the NDP in May. There's talk that one or more city councillors will run for the NDP, as well as someone on school board. Your name has been bandied about as perhaps being a candidate again, should a by-election arise. Is that something you've thought about?
I think I have. I can say honestly that I have thought about it, but I decided that that taking a break from politics right now and running for office. I'm a big believer in good timing, and right now I feel as though that for my own needs and the needs of my family, that it would be time to try and do something a little different right now. So I'm actually I've been working as a consultant now for 11 years, and I am looking to take a few new directions in terms of my career, partly because of some of the skills and network that I've built in the last few years as a political commentator and getting involved around the city in politics. So the short answer is no, I'm not seeking public office at this time.
We've talked when you've been on the program before you ran about sort of the difficulty of running for office, and I'm curious now that we're talking after you've run for office and lost, what that was like in terms of just the difficulties that one would face as a candidate.
Well, I certainly don't pity myself, and nor should anybody take pity on me. I mean, it was a sacrifice in terms of my personal bottom line, because, you know, the time that I was out meeting people around the city was time that I couldn't work or spend with my family. But that was a choice that I made going in, so I knew that was going to be the case. You know what, I'm actually a glasses half full guy. So I thought the experience of being able to meet as many people as I did around the city, get to know the city that I live in and the city that I love that much more intimately, was to me a positive experience. So I've kind of moved on. I think after you're finished an election campaign, it's very intense. It's like going into the playoffs. I mean, you probably need a few weeks just to kind of calm down, wind down, get back into your regular groove. And I'm sure that was the case with me. But I'm happy for the experience I had last year. I may do it again someday. But like I say, I have. You know, I'd like to look past the next couple of election cycles and maybe look at it again later on after I've done something else.
You were pretty much a lightning rod in that election. I mean, there were blogs in the city that, from both sides of the political spectrum, if you will, that attacked you. I mean, there was one blog run by someone who's close to, who's a supporter of the current mayor, compared you to Nixon, for example. And then there was another blog, I guess he'd be considered on the right, and he said some awfully mean things about you. I mean, did that change how you felt about politics, or did it make you cynical, perhaps?
Well, you know, I went into this with my eyes open. So the truth is there were things that were said that were sort of borderline, libelous, inaccurate, you know, mean-spirited. Unfortunately, the best thing you can do for yourself is just to either just ignore it and move on, and really hope that it doesn't come and affect the people in your life as well. Generally speaking, I just didn't even bother to look at that stuff. You know, the Nixon comparison was a funny one. Really, where that came from was I was walking down the street with one of our campaign photographers in the Granville Mall, and there was a guy standing there, a busker, with an electric guitar and an amp, and he was just doing one of those Eddie Van Halen moments. Mm-hmm. And so I just kind of pumped my hands in the air because I'm a, you know, as anybody tell you, I'm an old rock guy. I love...
You're wearing a Foo Fighters shirt.
Foo Fighters t-shirt right now. And so I pumped my hands in the air because this guy was just wailing on his electric guitar all by himself on Granville Mall, and they snapped a shot of me, and so I guess with my hands in the air, I must have looked like Dick Nixon getting off the helicopter.
Yeah. There's an interesting piece on the Huffington Post that you wrote, I guess it was last week?
Yes.
About Christy Clark. And the idea that she could win, conceivably, the May election. Now, you're someone who supports the BC Liberal Party. You're a supporter of this premier. You have to admit, I mean, I understand this morning that she's gone up in the polls, I think, what, 3%?
Sure.
Things don't look good for this party, for this government, for this premier. What do you think's gone wrong?
Well, I mean, I sometimes ask other people because I want to, you know, I have, I know enough people who follow politics that I can... I can kind of listen to all their ideas and help to form my own opinion. I think one thing that I can say with certainty is that Christy Clark is an exceptionally savvy politician. She can be really understand what the public is thinking, and I think her work as a talk show commentator proved that she was very good at kind of feeling the public pulse. I think what may be happening, and this is so true of, I think, a lot of people in politics, is that she stopped trusting her own instincts and perhaps was getting advice because there were some struggles, either the polls or there were unexpected things. I'll give you an example. She said that she, in hindsight, should have done what she originally promised to do, which is to kill the HST, not wait around for the referendum to happen. Well, you know, what happened as a referendum is pretty much what everybody expected. It was killed. Had she got rid of it earlier, that would have been more true to her own sort of feelings about the tax and the way it was brought in. But I think she got advice not to do that. And then there's the other question, and I'm not too sure whether this would have worked out right or not, but she did feel as though that she should have called a snap election after she became the leader. And I think she said as much recently that she probably should have done that. I know that I was one of the people who were saying, man, this party, this public is burned out on elections and in politics. We've just been through a federal election not too far earlier. There was all these leadership contests. So I think a lot of us are just saying, no, don't do it. But in hindsight, she should have probably done that last year.
Do you think she should have gone on 100 Huntley Street? My observation here to offer my thoughts on this. I mean, I've never voted for the BC Liberal Party, and I'm not sure who I'll vote for in May, but I watch that, and you know, I'm someone that interviews people, and I watch interviews, so I'd like to think that I have some experience. I mean, the questions of the hosts were you know, quite tightly scripted. You know, you couldn't drive your car through them. They seemed prepared, and she didn't seem prepared. I mean, one of the first things. I mean, she came off as, and I don't mean to be insulting or anything, but she came off as sounding like Sarah Palin. The question about some of the challenges in governing British Columbia, and then she talks about how the proximity of British Columbia to Asia, and then she starts naming all these Asian countries. I mean, it sounded like the Sarah Palin clip with Katie Couric. I guess that was her summer.
You know what? I didn't see and you know what? I've been away for a little bit of the last few weeks. I wish I could comment more intelligently on what you've just put forward. Being unprepared for an interview, well, I've been there. I would say that... including on this question, perhaps, but I just think that I don't know. I didn't hear that much about that, that issue, but I'm, you know, if you point that out, I'll go take a little closer look at it later on. But you're right. I think she just needs to be herself and not try and, you know, pandering is something that's not good for any politician.
It just seemed too that it came in a week in the summer when the week before there was a lot of talk of the Conservatives and the Conservatives sort of pulling better numbers than they were, or pulling higher numbers than they usually would, and it did seem like it was pandering to, I guess, this right wing Christian portion of our society. Well, I guess the portion of society that watches that show, at least.
I'm what I know about Christy Clark, and I don't claim to be an expert on Christy Clark, but I have seen her. For the most part, be extremely progressive on women's issues. Mm-hmm. I've never known her to be a social conservative in any way. In fact, I think she's probably been extremely vocal against those kinds of things. So, but I think there's when you're dealing with people who have values that are different than yours, and let's face it, it's not just, you know, the Christians. There are a number of different religious cultures that are quite conservative. I think you have to kind of find some common ground, and you have to try and respect that you're not going to be, for example, wearing a veil over your face because you just don't believe that. I don't know. I can't really speak for what the Premier did in that instance, I don't see her being a social conservative.
That's what I remember in terms of this summer for the Premier. I mean, I don't really recall hearing very much about Adrian Dix this past summer. I mean, we've heard now about stuff that's going on in the Conservative Party, them trying to dump their leader. I don't know what the story is there. But in terms of, let's move to the NDP now. They are, what, I guess, at 46% in the polls this morning. Mm-hmm. Is this a slam dunk for them? I mean, your column last week in the Huffington Post suggests otherwise.
I said no. That's because, and I in my column I did say that the BC NDP have increased their popularity by saying nothing. And the fact is that there will come a point where they're going to have to start to reveal their hand, describe how they see themselves leading the province, how they're going to try and create jobs, and how they're going to try and make sure that our taxes don't go up. And once we start to see more of what they really are about, I think that you'll have a more real choice. But right now, I think that there's, there has been a kind of a media kind of pile on everything to do with the BC Liberals, and I think that there's some old scores being settled here. I mean, Gordon Campbell was in power for a long time. He left. There's probably some people that are still choked about something that they did over the last decade, and they want to take it out on the current government. In terms of the NDP, as I also said in my Huffington Post article, I said that we had two items recently that the NDP did. They won. They announced that they were going to do the secondary environmental review, and they got slammed by the Vancouver Sun and others. This is redundant. I mean, we know what the outcome is going to be. It's going to be they don't approve it. So that was, one example of when they started to show what they were about. And the other one was, of course, the Liberals were wanting to know whether they're going to have secret balloting for union certification. Mm-hmm. Again, they've been extremely vague on this one and implying that they want to change it. And again, that received a very poor public response. So we're going to see more of what the NDP are really about eventually. And I think it's important that the public, the media, and the members of the government go keep pressing them on what they really want to stand for.
Are you seeing an exodus of say, BC Liberals going to the Conservatives?
I can honestly say I have not.
Will they be a factor in the next election, though?
The Conservatives?
Yeah.
Just me looking at... There's two things about political parties that are really important. One is that you need to have a solid and loyal backing the leader, whoever that person is. So that is starting to kind of come apart right now, as we can see with the BC Conservatives. The other thing you need is you need money and you need organization. So I guess that's three things.
Mm-hmm.
I do not see the kind of political talent, the people who know how to manage campaigns at the riding level, getting involved with the Conservatives. In fact, some of the people that I thought were really strong, had a lot of political experience, have since walked away from being involved with the BC Conservatives. So that, to me, is an indication that they're going to have a very tough fight trying to just make sure that they have good candidates and good organization on the ground. It's a brutal job to try and get campaigns going in 85 ridings. And then lastly is the money question. I see the big Conservative, if you like, the guys who are the, you know, titans of investment firms and law offices and all the rest of those Conservatives are not donating to the BC Conservative Party. So if you and so I think that's part of the reason we're seeing some of the friction. The other part of it is sort of the social conservative nature of Randy White and John Cummins that are having some real problems within the party there. But I just think the fact that they have no money and they're paying $4,000 a month plus benefits to Cummins has just become a huge problem for them. I would not be surprised to see them falling apart even further in the next few months.
I mentioned in the introduction of you and Daniel and City Caucus. I mean, that's since ended. Do you miss it at all?
You know, asked me if I was sad and disappointed after not winning in the election last year, and I said I was actually more depressed after City Caucus closed
yeah.
for the next couple of days, because it was you know, it was me and Daniel's baby,
yeah.
and we had done a lot with it. I think what we succeeded in doing there was changing how municipal politics was being covered locally. It was very much a closed shop back then. It was done, you know, kind of by a few mainstream media folks, and then we managed to be able to get the kind of stories and insight that you just never saw prior to 2008. And so I think we had a positive impact on where that went. So I was sad when it was over, but that was 2 months ago, and I've kind of have moved on now and proud of the legacy, but. I'm doing a little bit of contributing to Huffington Post, but I'm not putting a lot of time into blogging right now.
What do you make of how the whole internet, I guess the internet scene has changed? I mean, City Caucus was a big part of that. Now that's sadly over. You have websites like the Huffington Post coming into this part of the world. It's changed very quickly, hasn't it?
Yeah, I actually, when I was approached by Huffington Post, I had been aware of the brand.
Yeah.
And then I was also aware that there were a lot of very successful online news brands, if you want. For example, The Daily Beast, mm-hmm. which I, you know, follow their Twitter feed.
Yeah.
Has some very interesting writing and columns and videos that they post up there. I know that in the United States there are a lot of these kinds of hubs, if you like. What the Huffington Post is trying to do, we'll see if it works, but they're obviously going for stuff. They've got the cute, you know, 15 worst wedding photos mm-hmm. type posts. And then they have these really bold headlines, which really kind of come from... what's the fellow's name? It's just slipped my mind for just a second. It'll come back to me. And it almost looks kind of old school, 1998 circa, you know, with the great big, mm-hmm. you know, 28-point type across there with a headline. But they've managed to mix some blogging voices in there, some news, some entertainment, and I think they're starting to draw a lot of eyeballs. So, you know, I think it's kind of an interesting change. You know, locally we've got sites that have become kind of center points. Vancity Buzz is one of the better ones, and others, Vancouver is Awesome, Scout Magazine. You know, these ones all appeal to different audiences. I think HuffPost coming into BC may chip away at some of their audience too, you know, if they do it right.
I also read a tweet of yours yesterday. You're joining the board at PAL, the Performing Arts Lodge.
Yeah, the Performing Arts Lodge is a very interesting concept. It came from back east. It was brought into the Vancouver market. I'm guessing probably about 10 years ago, there was a first meeting. I was invited by Deborah Williams, who's a local actor, and she and I kind of knew each other back then. She said, hey, listen, they want to start this thing, and they're putting some people together in the room who might be able to help us to promote and start this idea going. My expertise at the time was communications, web, you know, email, and the rest of it. So I said, sure, I'll come in. So I sat on a steering committee with Jane Heyman and Joy Coghill-Thorne, who were starting that, and eventually got them set up on some communications. What they were doing at the time was just lobbying. They eventually, I think, got the Cope City Council to give them, cut a deal with them. They ended up getting a developer. They got a building that they were able to own. And it's kind of a social housing development for people who've been in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
And I pictured it as being a lot of seniors, but it's actually a mixture of ages. Yeah. So people who are, you know, are actors working from, you know, in various gigs, their income is a little bit unsteady, so they're able to go in there. And so now they've been in operation since, I think, about 2006. And they wanted to shake up things a little bit at the board, and they remembered me when we worked together all those years ago and asked me to come on. So I'm pleased to be coming on board.
Yeah, a number of the people that live there have put together a show, the production of Tom Stoppard's new play, and Michael Dobbin, who's one of the actors, and that was on Monday, I guess, or Tuesday.
Oh, terrific.
And it just seems like a fascinating place, and It's another theater company that's just come up from people who live there, you know.
They have a theater facility and, of course, the housing as well. The theater facility is something that they is a revenue generator as well for them. So I think they're looking for ideas on how they can make it, you know, because the more money that they bring into that facility, the lower, you know, the rates they'll have to charge for rent and things like that.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in today, Mike. I really appreciate this.
Oh, it's so great to be in your studio here, Joe. Appreciate it.
The website for more, michaelclausen.net. Michael Clausen joined me in studio here in Vancouver. I'm Joseph Plata.